Thanks, John. Hey, everybody. Hey, Jay. I am going to start with a song. I asked Inner Wisdom what to play when I was brushing my teeth a while ago. And mine said, well, we could do this and we could do that. And I'm like, shut up. So anyway, sitting here listening to Regina, this one came in. So this one's what we're playing. So let me pull it up. You've heard it before. I've played it before. It's wanting to be played now. How sweet is that? Yeah. And Toto too. You're a little dog too. But yeah, it's sweet. I find myself watching Toto in that video. You know, Toto's like pawing, like, pay attention to me. Aw, look, there's a little Toto. Susan's got a Toto. Yeah, it's a sweet song. It just, it was perfect because it just, for me, just really kept with that mood that Regina was setting with the stillness, the quietness, when she was telling us to go to that place in us, with the word that came to me was the unperturbed place, but I couldn't spell it, so I couldn't put it on the chat. The place that's unperturbed. All right, so last time I promised you guys, and I know you've been waiting all week, I promised you guys that I was going to start reading this book, Lock Kelly, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. So that's what we're going to do. I'm just going to read, obviously, where there's place to comment, I'll comment. Hopefully I won't just read to you. If I find that that's what we're doing, then we'll have to do something else. But even if I were just doing that, you know, this is full of his glimpses, so we'll be able to do the glimpses together. But this first part is an introduction, and I'm going to read the introduction, so I'm probably not going to have a lot to say. Without further introduction or ado, I will begin reading the book. Locke says, my life before I began to practice effortless mindfulness was completely different from the way it is now. Growing up, I was neither calm nor contemplative. I struggled with some form of dyslexia and ADD, and I had an underlying feeling that something wasn't quite right, that something was missing or out of balance. Okay, so I am going to stop here, and I'm going to say that anytime you guys want to comment, ask a question, ask me to go back, well, I mean, whatever, anytime, just jump right in, because it feels like this should be participatory. Yeah. The Way of Effortless Mindfulness by Locke Kelly. It's his latest book. Okay. The only time I experienced relief from this background anxiety was while engaged in sports, feeling myself in my body and in the zone. Once during an ice hockey game in junior high school, the source was the not source score. the score was tied 1-1. And after the last time out, I dropped into a sense of well-being, effortless focus, and connection with my teammates. It was as if time slowed down, and playing together in this concentrated way brought me into a profound sense of embodied, joyful flow. It was after this taste of effortless mindfulness that I started wondering, how did this happen? And could I find a way to intentionally access this joy of being in other parts of my life? As I grew up, I became increasingly curious about and hungry for other ways of experiencing this dimension of life. Like many in my generation, I tried reading spiritual books, traveling, romantic relationships, artistic pursuits, being in nature, and even sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as I sought lasting happiness. My search eventually led me to graduate school in psychology and spirituality, where a new door opened. I received a travel fellowship to study at university in Sri Lanka and at meditation centers in India and Nepal. There, I met teachers who devoted their lives to meditation, awakening, and compassionate living. With one of these teachers, so now I'm going to pronounce this teacher's name, Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche. I'm sure that's how it's pronounced. Anyway, with one of these teachers, he was introduced to the advanced yet simple approach called effortless mindfulness, which is a different form of mindfulness from the kind that is so popular in the West today. Effortless mindfulness is a way of opening to a natural, wise, and loving awareness that is already present within us, which reveals qualities of well-being, clarity, and compassionate action. I'm going to read his definition of effortless mindfulness again. It's a way of opening to a natural, wise, and loving awareness that is already present within us, which reveals qualities of well-being, clarity, and compassionate action. And I will say about that, you notice that this natural, wise, and loving awareness has the qualities of well-being, clarity, and compassionate action. And all of these are natural qualities that are already occurring within us. And I just think that's so important, because it's not something that we attain. It's not something we get better at, and finally, we're compassionate, clear, and have a sense of well-being. You know, it's not. It's already there. It's where we go when we go to that place Regina was talking about. Jay.
I just wanted to throw in non-perturbed awareness. That's I'm going to use that now. You got that in my head. So
yeah, I can't believe Locke didn't mention it. Yeah.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Thanks, Jay. All right. He says of effortless mindfulness, it is a way of shifting out of the chattering mind and into the source of our mind, which is already awake and aware, where we can rest, engage, and feel unconditional love. Effortless mindfulness is a unique form of mindfulness that allows us to immediately open to clarity and love, notice the word immediately, that allows us to immediately open to clarity and love in the midst of our busy everyday lives. The way of effortless mindfulness is about both waking up and growing up. So it combines a unique meditative and psychological approach to healing trauma and living an awakened life. Effortless mindfulness gave me a way of relieving my underlying suffering and connecting to an inner joy that I didn't even know existed. My life is freer and easier than it was before I discovered effortless mindfulness, and for this, I'm deeply grateful. One example I can share is that writing my first book with my dyslexia and ADD took me 10 years. Given the title of this book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness, it might not surprise you that I wrote it through the practice of effortless mindfulness. Though there was still the pain of writing with ADD, this book flowed out into form in just 9 months. The first one took him 10 years. This one took 9 months. Yeah. The gift of effortless mindfulness has been finding a new willingness to show up fully with my quirks and struggles. The more I'm able to let go, the greater the unconditional loving support that has appeared within, around, and throughout my life. And I have to tell you that this reminds me of, I listened to a TED talk that I made, maybe one that I'll play for you guys when I start this new program. But at any rate, there's a TED talk called What If There's Nothing Wrong With You? And it's really this invitation not to resist. You know, he had ADD and dyslexia, and he wasn't going, daggone it, if I only didn't have this, I could write a book. I mean, the resistance, and what he's telling us here is the resistance wasn't there. He embraced this, right? He said, the gift of effortless mindfulness has been finding a new willingness to show up fully with my quirks and struggles. I'm not pretending I don't have them. I'm not battling them. I'm showing up and going, okay. And that's what we've been hearing for a long time. We've been hearing that from Jeff Foster. That's what we heard from Mary Reed forever ago when we did the set songs with her. It's not about rejecting parts of ourselves. It's about embracing all of it. It's, you know, we talk about the wish that everything were different than it is, and how we perpetuate, you know, the world and the seeming reality of the world by wishing everything in our lives were different than it is. And the contrast with that, of course, is loving everything, is the loving all method. And I think that's what he's talking about here. The gift of effortless mindfulness has been finding a new willingness to show up fully with my quirks and struggles. The more I'm able to let go, the greater the unconditional loving support that has appeared within, around, and throughout my life. I experience deeper levels of vulnerability and courage by opening to parts of myself that I avoided in the past. I've been able to feel my interconnectedness with other living beings, and as a result, I've gained a new level of motivation to be of service. Since my first encounter with effortless mindfulness over 3 decades ago, developing this practice within myself and teaching it to others has been my life's inspiration and vocation. This book is meant to be like a letter to a friend. It is an invitation. I'm more of a coach or a guide than a preacher or a guru. I'm here to share pointers and principles so you can find effortless mindfulness for yourself, as if to say, hey, the water's great. Come on in. Guess what? We can awaken together. I am convinced that accessing the natural well-being of unconditional love is learnable and teachable, and hope this book will help you find what is already yours. Different form of mindfulness. Effortless mindfulness is a unique form of mindfulness. What most people in the West know as mindfulness, I call deliberate mindfulness. The teachings of deliberate mindfulness stem primarily from the Theravada and Zen traditions of South and East Asia, and the initial practices of Tibetan Buddhism. Deliberate mindfulness has also been brought into secular settings in the United States through mindfulness practices for physical and psychological treatment and stress reduction, such as mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR. I love these practices because they provide a way of cultivating calm, patience, and intentional loving kindness. I have taught deliberate mindfulness for decades as a teacher at New York Insight Meditation Center and have seen the practice help countless people. I deeply value deliberate mindfulness and its benefits. I am grateful for the popularity it is gaining in the West because it is allowing people to find greater peace of mind. Effortless mindfulness, on the other hand, can be considered a different form of mindfulness, which is sometimes taught after having developed a deliberate mindful practice. It can also be a helpful alternative approach for those who have had difficulty with concentration practices or sitting meditation. Though often considered advanced, it can be a good starting place for people who are new to meditation. The effortless mindfulness practice begins with an opening to an already awake, optimal mind from which we can be effortlessly focused. Let me read that again. The effortless mindfulness practice begins with an opening to an already awake, optimal mind from which we can be effortlessly focused. The full unfolding leads to a life that is not more detached, however, but more embodied, intimate, courageous, and wise. Effortless mindfulness has its roots in the world's wisdom traditions that are often described as direct path, essence traditions, or non-dual traditions. The premise of the direct approach in all meditative traditions is that the awake, loving nature we are seeking is already here within us and can be accessed immediately. The primary non-dual tradition that the effortless mindfulness map and practices in this book draw from is called Sutra Mahamudra, which began in North India and links the three main traditions of Buddhism, Theravada, Mahayana, and Tibetan. Sutra Mahamudra was primarily a movement of lay practitioners who developed a style of practice to facilitate awakening, a shift and upgrade of awareness, mind, and identity in the midst of everyday life. Effortless mindfulness is ideal for our contemporary Western culture in that it demonstrates that awakening is possible for anyone without having to leave home, friends, work, or family. So even us householders can do it, right? Benefits of effortless mindfulness. In bringing effortless mindfulness into the contemporary Western context, I have grown increasingly interested in the particular obstacles and supports to living a genuine awakened life. Obstacles. I don't know. I'm just going to read that one again because I feel too. In bringing effortless mindfulness into the contemporary Western context, I have grown increasingly interested in the particular obstacles and supports to living a genuine awakened life. In this book, I present a way of working with the emotional, energetic, and psychological aspects of our human experience and identity. However, this book isn't about the philosophy of consciousness, mindfulness, or awakening. I present a theory and hypothesis, but also a set of practices so that you can experience the results for yourself. I have included plenty of meditations that are direct and experiential, glimpses into a whole new way of seeing and being. With effortless mindfulness, you'll uncover a sense of well-being that relieves suffering at its root. Students who consistently practice effortless mindfulness describe a relief from judgmental thinking, a deep sense of safety and well-being, a sense of openness and interconnection, and an ability to welcome strong emotions with less worry, fear, and shame. They also experience more compassion for themselves and others, a greater motivation, clarity, and optimal functioning at work, and a new capacity for creativity and loving relationships. So there you go. That's where we're going. I believe that no matter where you are on your life's journey or in your meditation practice, you'll find something of benefit in engaging effortless mindfulness. I am convinced after decades of studying, practicing, seeing students' progress, and conversing with colleagues that awakening is truly possible in the midst of our everyday lives. This is possible because the awake nature that we are seeking is already here and available within us. Awakening is part of our common human heritage, spanning all traditions and cultures. In fact, I see clear indications that awakening is the next natural stage of human development. Yeah, that's a pretty sweeping statement. Clear indications that awakening is the next natural stage of human development. But, you know, I mean, I think that he's right on. I don't know why. I think that he's right on. But I do. It's just the next natural thing. Dawn.
I would have to agree, because a lot of what we do to ourselves in society comes from how disconnected we are from our true self. Like overeating, gambling, wanting to hurt another, you know, all kinds of habits we have. They're just coping mechanisms to deal with that fear, that shame. But once you get in touch with what he's talking about, that awake, aware heart, you know, the presence, it becomes very clear that now you have a resource. You have something other than going to your usual go-tos, whatever coping mechanisms you had before. And oh my, what would the world look like if there were more who were engaging in that? Imagine that your coping mechanism is being one with your true essence.
You mean instead of drinking or smoking a joint?
Or smacking someone around, or, you know, there's all kinds of ways you'd be surprised that people cope with their issues. So, I mean, that seems like evolution to me compared to what we're, I mean, even the news recently, you know, wow, what a world we would live in if more people were like even aware of this. Like for me, one of the coolest things about this book is that he admits that he has ADD and dyslexia. Mm-hmm. I mean, how cool would it be for people who seemingly have these issues to get a hold of this information and see that no matter, even if you are presented with that, look, you have a way. This could help you. And you could still, you know, be, I mean, I imagine that someone who has ADD, this is just my imagining though, is, or dyslexia, you really beat yourself up for that. And what if they could see that they don't have to do that? There's another way for them to learn or have attention or be able to focus on something. Maybe they never went to school because they feel like they couldn't read because of dyslexia. And then now all of a sudden, all these opportunities open up for them where they weren't there before. Or maybe they can stop taking their medicine, which makes them be a zombie. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, as you're speaking, I'm drawn back to what we were talking about a while ago about, you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with you.
Yes, exactly.
And all that. And
I know he's teaching this.
Yes, I think so too. And that leads me to think of Temple Grandin, right? Who who has autism, that makes her really good at some of the stuff that we non-autistic people are not good at, you know? So we tend to try to normalize, this is what's normal in society, and if you're not that, then you should be ashamed of yourself. And we all go, okay, yeah, I'm not that, so I'm ashamed, right? But to really explore, I mean, this to embrace what is, whatever's showing up as Dawn or Shauna or Jacqueline or whatever, right? Embrace that. Oh, how cool is this? Look where I get to navigate from. From right here, not where do I wish I was. I'm right here, so let me navigate from here with, you know, my lack of organization or whatever, right? Or whatever seems to be, or my short legs or whatever seems to be going on. This is what's right here. Let me love this, and from here, you know, go out and do what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. Yeah, Jay.
I think of the teaching about accepting the unacceptance, which has come up quite a bit lately. I hear that in what you're saying about accepting where you're at and going from there, or as Regina was talking about, accepting the busy day and maintaining peace, which actually I did today. This piling up work on Wednesday, I had to touch 5 projects today, do my laundry, all this other stuff, and then I encountered as a topper this completely unknown thing that hit me sideways, and I almost lost my peace, but something different happened this time. I accepted it, and it was like this part of me tried to get me upset, but it didn't actually work. I didn't lose my peace. I came close, but this other habit of accepting it was kicking in, and pretty soon the solution was clear, and I just did it. But the cool thing was, is I accepted it, and it was like 52% acceptance, 48% problem, and right. F yeah, the 52% won, and I'm like, how did that happen? I just made it through this without actually losing my peace. I couldn't freaking believe it. It was so cool. I just thought I'd share that. Yeah.
Thanks, Jay. You know, it's funny when Regina was talking this morning, and this keeps coming up in my head, so I guess I'll mention it. When I get busy, it seems like I got this. I can do all this. And then there'll be one more thing pop up. Usually it's one more person, right? So, not losing peace, you know, everything's good. And then the internet company called me while I was in the shower because I'm getting slower speeds than what I'm paying for. And they're like, if you can call us, we can do some diagnostics. Well, I've already spent 3.5 hours, 4 hours on the phone with these people, right? It's like, no, I have work to do. You fix it, right? But I could see that my tendency is to, I can see how in days past that would have gone completely under the radar and I would have just projected on these people, you know, and that would have been the answer, you know? I mean, not that I would have called them and said that, but that I would have accepted that as true. Can you believe the nerve of these people that, you know, without, and let that go completely unexamined? The idea being that, you know, I try and keep how dare they, Jade writes. But it's like this unacknowledged stuff that goes on that keeps going, you got a lot to do, you got a lot to do, you don't have a spare minute. And, you know, those thoughts aren't necessarily acknowledged. They're the under the radar thoughts. And then, you know, they burst like a zit. Gross, I know. but they would in times past they would burst and I would be really upset with the internet company, right? But like Jay's saying, this time I was like, well, you know, what I just said to y'all, the thoughts that I just said out loud, you know, I've already worked on this, you all come fix it. But I saw the thoughts. I'm like, oh, that's the, you know. That's the bursting out of the whatever it is, anxiety or low level of stress or whatever is going on there. It's got nothing to do with the internet company. And they're not going to send a guy out here to sit down at my computer and, you know, call them. I mean, that's not how it works, right? So, you know, the internet will either speed up or it won't, depending on whether or not I get time to call them. This is the second time we've been through this process, by the way, and they dropped it the first time because there was no communication. So, anywho, the point being, now I've told that story, but I really did. I saw that thought, and I saw the opportunity to just project it onto somebody else or to see it for what it was and then to go on. But but there's just, you know, calling it out for what it is, I think is valuable. So, all right. Okay, so let's see. I see clear indications that awakening is the next natural stage of human development. I have seen how those who are awakening have naturally begun to heal, teach, and support others, which seems to be part of a consciousness revolution.
Yay.
Many of us are concerned about social, political, economic. Jay's given the closed fist sign. Thanks, Jay. We are solid. many of us are concerned about social, political, economic, and environmental issues on this planet. I believe that taking responsibility to find our own true sense of compassionate interconnectedness and then helping others do the same can be a radical collective healing that can bring a better future for all of us. And let me say that, this reminds me of the tip that I struggled with, not yesterday, I guess it was the day before, about, you know, okay, this is all great about, you know, the self-inquiry and turning to be with life awareness, with awareness, life presence. But gosh, you know, in the light of these mass shootings, in the light of the turmoil that's going on in this world, how is this helpful? And you know, and we went back to this mandate from A Course in Miracles, to accept the atonement for ourselves. The sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. And this is what Locke seems to be touching on, is this, you know, again, I believe that taking responsibility to find our own true sense of compassionate interconnectedness and then helping others do the same can be a radical collective healing that can bring a better future for all of us. Now, you know, there's a part of me that goes, we're not trying to make a better world here. Whatever, right? I mean, it's just like, it's just chatter, right? Because it's a one mind healing unto itself. And this is exactly what Inner Wisdom was saying to me in that tip. It's about accepting the atonement for myself, accepting the corrective thoughts for myself, no longer believing that stuff that says I need to holler at the internet company because my speed isn't fast enough and I don't have time to fool with it. I mean, right? That's feeding that energy of the world. But bringing it back and turning around, metaphorically turning around to be with, yes, exactly, right here, Shauna. To be in that spot that we were talking about with Regina earlier. That's what's called for. That's what's healing. And whether or not the effects of that are felt in the world, and you certainly would think that they would be, but that, you know, that's a byproduct. That's not the goal, right? The goal is to be here. Locke says, my intention with this book is to bring a particular approach to awakening into our world so that it can transform our lives and communities. Right. The flow and structure of this book. The Way of Effortless Mindfulness is a unique, comprehensive guidebook to an advanced yet simple form of mindfulness that brings immediate and lasting benefits. It offers a systematic map to navigate consciousness. I begin by introducing ways of discovering an already awake awareness that is the source of your mind and identify through experimenting with micro meditations or mindful glimpses and noticing the results. Each individual will find that different glimpses are more suited to them than others, and the unfolding is equally unique. You know, of course, Miracles told us that, right? Each path is highly individualized. I do notice that when I read this, I want to argue with Locke, and I love Locke. He's so sweet. He's such a gentle soul. But I want to argue with Locke in this sentence, and it's not necessary. But every time I read his use of the word mind, there's a little bump, so I'm going to talk about it here for a minute. He says, I begin by introducing ways of discovering an already awake awareness that is the source of your mind and identity through experimenting with micro meditations or mindful glimpses. Now, and so now that I've read it again, I don't have as much to argue with. there's no question. He's just talking about the same thing that there's only one source, right? But he's accessing that same spot that we're talking about, right? He's like, I'm going to take you to the source. Everything comes from source. Your identity, your mind, nothing would be without awareness, life, presence. And I'm going to take you there through these mindful glimpses. Okay, he says, part one of the book starts by introducing the fundamentals of effortless mindfulness. Then I compare and contrast effortless mindfulness with the more familiar deliberate mindfulness in order to give you a clear sense of this lesser known style. I go on to introduce, and this is so funny, the first time reading this book, it reminded me of Buddhism, you know, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path to, you know, it's got all these different formulas, and he does some of that here. My experience with them and having read this book, just before, is that they're very clear and they're very helpful, but I did get tickled how, you know, he came out of that tradition. And so he kind of carries it on here. He says, I go on to introduce the five foundations of effortless mindfulness and a series of practices that are effortless mindfulness versions of classic deliberate mindfulness practices, such as one-pointed focus, loving kindness, and insight meditation. Part two is a deeper dive into effortless mindfulness as a way of living an awakened life. Here, I point to details of the map of awakening and give a series of mindful glimpses for each of the five foundations of effortless mindfulness. I am interested in offering a set of practices for effortless mindfulness, just as there are standard deliberate mindfulness practices. Some of my standard mindful glimpses are also available in my first book, Shift into Freedom, and in audio and video form, so you can listen to them after you read them. And I know that if you go to Locke's website, he has those available, lockkelly.org, lockkelly.org. He has we might call them guided meditations, the guided glimpses on his website. And of course, they're also available on YouTube. He says, part three offers way of further supporting awakening, along with an appendix that discusses some of the traps and detours that prevent us from unfolding and embodying awakening. And I found those to be really helpful. And at some point, we'll get there. It's part three of the book, Traps and Detours. He says, I describe the integration of awakening and psychotherapy and conclude with tools and techniques to continue your journey of embodying effortless mindfulness. This is a practice book to help you not only understand effortless mindfulness, but most importantly, to experience it and embody it, to live from effortless mindfulness. If you had picked up a book about how to ride a bicycle, intellectual explanations would not be the primary way to learn, and the same applies here. Instead, I encourage you to adopt a beginner's mind, open your heart, and enjoy the ride. Sweet. All right. So, the book proper, part one, discovering the next stage of mindfulness. Most of us love the feeling of effortlessness. Some of the happiest times in our lives happen when we flow with the silent music of life. The sight of a dancer, athlete, or bird moving with ease and grace inspires us. What if you could learn to shift into a level of mind in which suffering could be relieved and wisdom, love, and joy naturally uncovered? What if you could discover a reliable way to access a sense of safety and open-heartedness that shifts us out of the confusion we have been so tightly caught in? What if awakening, shifting your consciousness into a more compassionate way of seeing and being, were something you could learn? What if there were an art, a science, and even repeatable methods to live from effortless mindfulness? My experience is that there are. This reality has been reported by ancient wisdom traditions and by many people I've met, and it's possible for you. Effortless mindfulness is both a natural capacity and a skillful way to connect with ourselves and others. It is a way of being mindful from a different level of mind than we are used to. There is more to effortless mindfulness than meditation. And, you know, what keeps screaming to be said is, you know, that these are the, you know, this is not different than anything that we've been learning. And I think Regina helped demonstrate this for us in her teaching. Don't know the name of that teaching the other night when she had each of us that were in the room take the mic and try to speak and be present at the same time. And that was difficult for most of us. It was like trying to pat your head and rub your belly or walk and chew bubble gum, you know, that sort of thing. But it was quite the interesting experiment. Yeah. Can you do it, Shauna? Shauna's trying to pat her head and rub her belly. And that's where he's going with this, right? How can we stay in that presence all of the time? Dawn mentioned something in a meeting yesterday. She was talking about this embodied practice, about a retreat maybe on embodied practice. So it's funny that doesn't want to be said because it's gone. So give me just a second, see if I can what I wanted to say about that. And it occurred to me that if we were to do a retreat on that, and, you know, we're just brainstorming, but if we were to do a retreat about embodied practice, a great name for the retreat would be In the World But Not Of It. Yeah. And again, I think that that's what Locke is talking about here, operating from that space of effortless mindfulness all the time. Jay says, let's do it. Alrighty. So let me find where I was. There's more to effortless mindfulness than meditation. Effortless mindfulness is primarily an off the meditation cushion way of weaving together contemplation and compassionate actions. Effortless mindfulness begins by opening to a natural, spacious awareness in order to become more wise, embodied, and creative. A new ethical motivation springs from the realization of a loving interconnection with all of life. And you all heard me talk about that in my experience lately. You know, you've heard me say it. I prayed. I want an open heart. I want to experience a heart opening. I want an open heart. And it's the prayer seemed to go quite unanswered. And yet, as I began to earnestly practice awareness, watching awareness, as I began to earnestly get that I'm not my thinking mind, this bubbled up. This open heart bubbled up from within me. That's what it seems Locke is talking about here. He says a new ethical motivation springs from the realization of a loving interconnection with all of life. And I think that that's been my experience. He says, when I teach effortless mindfulness, I'm often asked, how do I know when I'm really doing it? What does effortless mindfulness feel like? And I'll tell you, the first time I did a satsang with Locke, he was you know, talking about these, again, it was shift into freedom. He's talking about doing these different glimpses, and I'm like, yeah, but where's God in all of this? And I don't think he really addressed that question. I think he, you know, sidestepped the question because, I mean, it was an – was an off the wall question, right? Where's God in all of this? Right where God's always been, right here, right? And I'm pointing to my heart center. Yeah. Yeah. Jay, did you want to share?
Just throw in a 2 cents comment into the mix here about the worldview thing. I did notice heavily in Locke's comments, both, you know, when he spoke and I'm already from your book, worldview stuff, right? And then, of course, there was your comment about that, which is, I think, went through all of our minds, right? The thought I have is when we practice the embodied practice, and I think he's come up with some great systems here. I'm kind of looking forward to getting into them. But that's just a byproduct. Whatever the world's going to do will be a byproduct of that. It can't be the goal. And that's how the mind hijacks even something amazing like what Locke came up with. It's a risk to get into that idealism about wanting to make the world awakened, right? I mean, so it's like I ignore that is what I do. I just focus on the practice. And as a right, as a natural byproduct, right? It's going to happen. Right. So exactly. That's not my goal. That's not why I'm doing it. Because then I forget the whole reason for doing it.
Well, right. I mean, that's making the world real and thinking that something needs to be different than it is, right? Yeah, that's why I don't – we're not looking for that as an end result. Our sole responsibility is accepting the right mind for ourselves, accepting who we really are, right, or the atonement, the Course will call it. Yeah. Thank you, Jay. So he says, when I teach effortless mindfulness, I'm often asked, how do I know when I'm really doing it? What does effortless mindfulness feel like? And he says, each person experiences a different facet of the diamond of effortless mindfulness as it shows its qualities to us freshly each time. A glimpse of effortless mindfulness might initially feel like any of the following. You feel relief. Your mind is wide open and without an agenda. Your thoughts are less prominent or have moved into the background. You are free of worry, fear, and judgment. And I'm just going to pause here and remind you what this list is. This list is answer to the question, what does effortless mindfulness feel like? So you might feel any of these things. You're able to effortlessly focus on something without concentrating. Your center has moved from your head to your heart. You are resting as a field of seamless awareness that is outside and within your body. You feel aware from the now, capital N now. You feel aware from the now and able to be aware of the past, present, or future when needed. And that strongly smacks of what that practice we did with Regina the other day, right? About being present, even as we're speaking for a minute. Everything seems to be flowing easily, happening naturally, without any effort. You experience a sense of joy and well-being, not related to what's happening. And I'll tell you, I have had that experience, and I heard Helen, when she did the Sunday morning gathering a couple weeks ago, talking about that very experience, that inexplicable bubbling joy in here that's going on while you're angry, right, while you're depressed. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. How can you have this joy bubbling and be angry? But it is. It just is. And in fact, somebody was talking about, this goal, if you will, of attaining peace. And I think that certainly, A Course in Miracles encourages, or A Course in Miracles says that its goal is to teach us peace of mind. But A Course in Miracles also says, this ain't the end of the road. There's more here. And so I truly believe, because I have experienced this joy that's going on no matter what's going on, I truly believe that joy is that one step further. I mean, we don't even imagine we could aspire to feel joyful all the time. Are you kidding me? Peace I get, but joy, you know, that's just an occasional happening. And I'm here to tell you that I don't believe that for a minute. There's an underlying joy that is the nature of our being. So he says, you experience a sense of joy and well-being not related to what is happening. You are aware from boundless, interconnected, loving presence rather than a detached point of view. You feel aware from non-conceptual awareness rather than thought. You know all is well with nothing missing and nothing to push away. Yeah, and we talk a lot about that, you know, the all is well. We're told that over and over and over again. In fact, you know, you could interpret those lines from A Course in Miracles, those opening nine lines. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God, right? All is well. You could interpret forgiveness. And I have read A Course in Miracles instead of saying forgiveness to say knowing all is well, you know, is the equivalent of forgiveness. And so it's right there. And then this nothing missing, you know, what if things were different? No, you don't, you know, you're not, we don't live there. There's nothing missing. And then this final thing that we talked about earlier, nothing to push away, right? We're embracing all of it, the dyslexia and the ADD and the short legs and the unorganized, you know, whatever it is, right? We're embracing all of that. Dawn, go ahead.
I just love how just reading the list, because I'm following along too and reading with my Kindle version, I love how just reading that list was just an instant reminder of the glimpse practice that I've done. And it was instantly helping me to, in this moment, feel what he's talking about.
It's amazing.
I just want to acknowledge how grateful I am for that. Like, just reading a list was reminding me of the truth of my own being. Woohoo!
Woohoo, I'm right with you. That's great. Well, and I have reached the end of the list, and I'm sorry that we did not get an opportunity to do the mindful glimpses today, but that is the very next section, introducing mindful glimpses. So we will start. There's like four paragraphs and then a mindful glimpse. So next week, I won't be here because I'll be in retreat, right? That's next week, right? So the week after that, sorry guys, but the week after that, we'll jump right into the mindful glimpses. I appreciate you guys being here. I love you dearly, and I'll see you next time.